Hello and welcome back to the DCI Judge List Summaries. This episode for December 2011, coming to you from a very windy house in the Isle of Wight. Right, what have we got for you this month? From the document section, we've got some articles that address the revamped Premier Play changes, one by Eric Sorensen and one by Helene Bergeau. They're both on magicthegathering.com. They're definitely worth a read if you're interested in competitive play. Don't particularly affect us as judges much, apart from the change to the World Championships, of course. But I guess if you're interested in how pro play is going to play out in the coming year, you might want to give those a check. There are new judge articles, which you can find a list on the Judge Wiki. Speaking of the Judge Wiki, Christian Gorilovich tells us that the biggest news, the Judge Wiki has moved. Its new home is the IMJ, it's International Magic Judges, or to give it its full URL, wiki.internationalmagicjudges.net. Excellent resource there. The transfer of the wiki from its previous location isn't actually fully complete at the moment, so if you believe a page is missing that you wish to use, then please do let Christian Gorilovich or Tasha Jameson know so they can make sure that the missing content is moved over. If you do have bookmarks or links in your signatures or wherever else you're referring to the Judge Wiki, then please do update. We don't want people finding broken links and thinking that we don't love them anymore. Speaking of December articles, the wiki does now track articles written by judges across many different sites. For December, you've got the World's 2011 Head Judge Report, which is one of Sheldon Mennery's greatest pieces, probably. He tells some awesome stories from head judging Worlds in San Francisco before retiring as Level 5 and becoming a judge emeritus. There is cake, interesting rulings, and food. I'm not quite sure why cake doesn't qualify as food there, but never mind. We also have two articles by Justin Turner in the Education and Development category. We've got What to Do as a Judge and How You Can Become a Judge. Sounds like they're aimed very much at beginning judgelings, if you will. That's on Gathering Magic. I should have said Sheldon's World Report is on the Star City Games website. Eskil Mirrenberg mentioned on the list that he was intending to write an article about disqualifications, and in response you got a list of various resources that are already out there, which are definitely worth checking out. We've got a Player's Introduction to Penalties, 10 Things You Should Know, that's on the wiki. A Judge's Guide to Avoiding Accidental Penalties by Greg Schwartz, that's off on the draftmagic.com website. Links to these are all available from the text version of the DCI Judge summary, which you should see on DCI Judge L itself. There's also a Don't Get DQ'd article by Justin Turner, who's been a prolific article writer in his time. That's on gatheringmagic.com as well as his previous efforts. Ryan Schenck, as ever, has been doing some fantastic work analysing judge test results, especially in comparison to judge practice test results, working out which questions are working, which questions aren't quite so hot, what kind of things the judges are typically struggling to learn. None of this is particularly useful, however, if the Judge Centre content is being leaked out. So we have a bit of a warning here. If you do take judge practice tests, you do take judge tests, remember those questions are supposed to be kept secret. Do not spread knowledge of those questions around outside people who haven't already taken those tests, at least. And finally, for stuff you can read, wiki content is being collected up by Michael Weiser and Jürgen Baert on a collection of best practices for tournament operations. Again, that's currently on the wiki. If you have anything to contribute, then please do go ahead, get in there, get that page edited. Or, of course, if you're looking for team leading tips or general operational kind of tips to do with respect from head judge, for instance, or how public events at large shows work, then do check out the page yourself. On to community news for December. As a clarification of the shirts and logos policy by Andy Hecht, there's been some discussion regarding the official policy of the new and old judge logos. There's the old DCI kind of logo and the newer Magic Judge logo. There is no official policy enforcing the use of a single logo for an event. All new shirts will have the new Judge logo. Patches will be made available for those who do have the old shirts, which can be ironed on. Sewing's better to make sure it survives. I haven't actually received my patch yet. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, in the meantime, there's no policy enforcing a single judge logo. So if you are using the old logo, then I guess don't sweat it too much. The Nordic Judge Conference happened. Johanna Vertanen wrote a report about it. Biggest judge conference in the Nordic countries, with a total of 18 judges attending. As always with these kind of things, it's been difficult to get some presenters going, but everyone did learn a huge amount, and everyone had a good time as well, even though there was no cake. But then again, I'm not sure any cake was promised, so whether the cake was a lie, I can neither confirm or deny. Johanna also posted her traditional list of judge birthdays, so judges who reached the 5 and 10 year anniversary are celebrated on the community website. The featured veteran for the month is Annick van der... I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong. Annick van der Peel. Hopefully she will write in and correct me on my pronunciation if I've got that completely butchered. Carlos Ho has also been busy listing out the judge advancements for the month. We have 67 new judges, 15 new level 2 judges. There's a full list of those on the list. We also have short portraits of the 3 new level 3 judges, George Chikopoulos, David Hibbs and Jason Reedy. And in the in other big news for December, Jason LeMahieu has been promoted to level 5. Again, I bet you I've butchered that name. Sorry, Jason. Please don't fire me. Extra special advancement for him. His promotion was at Worlds 2011. He's been on the radar of most senior judges since his promotion to level 4. His ability to find the areas of the programme that need support and rally judges, even other L4 judges, onto projects is what makes him quite the outstanding judge. His involvement spans online community building, encouragement for judges globally, and most importantly, working with retailers to help them understand the judge programme. Ever present in the virtual realm, he's expanded his physical participation to other continents to increase his understanding of the judge program. And Jason has also been a bridge between judges and retailers, judges and distributors, and between cross-cultural judges. So, excellent work, Jason. Nice promotion, well deserved. Ben McDowell is looking for project volunteers. A team is planning on developing a list of travel guides for judges travelling to different destinations. I know I'd certainly appreciate one for GP Turin. Getting there seems quite difficult, especially from the UK. Not sure if anyone else has got similar experiences. If you would like to get involved, please email travelguidevolunteers@internationalmagicjudges.net. Earlier I mentioned Brian Schenck's amazing work with recommendations for L1 candidates based on analysis of the judge tests and the judge practice tests to see kind of what's going on. We've got some of that work here. He says he's likely to be posting a state of the L1 exam article once there's a bit more information in, but since the redefinition, results have been pretty solid, and here's some recommendations that Brian has for us. These kind of areas are troublesome for L1 candidates at the moment. We're confusing can't be countered with can't be targeted by counterspells, which is a subtle distinction there. Handling serious problems at the regular rules enforcement level. And this may well be because people aren't actually reading the JAR, I don't know. It's worth giving it a read. If all of your judge knowledge is based on the IPG, then you won't actually know what the JAR is telling you. Very simple document, you'll be able to read it very quickly. Announcing damage assignment order versus assigning combat damage. This is discussed in the basic rulebook, and it did change back in M10, and those changes are still catching people. It's no surprise, I'm sure. It was a pretty complex change, and people had been comfortable with the combat damage rules before M10, but they've changed quite a while ago now, and hopefully everyone should have caught up. So bear in mind that L1 candidates are struggling with that, and help them out where you can. Triggered abilities, particularly with the APNAP ordering and recognising that triggered abilities don't activate, is another place that's tripping L1s up. And also the combat phase in Two-Headed Giant, or in particular, the fact that you attack the team rather than individual players. Individual players only come in where you actually need to assign the damage to a particular head, such as you've got a creature that when it hits a player, they need to discard a card. Obviously, it's important to know which player took the damage so we know which player needs to discard the card. But that doesn't happen at attack time, that happens at damage time. There's also a strong recommendation from Brian that L1 candidates really should make the most use of the easy practice exams. We fleshed out the test pool to provide more content that serves as a learning exercise for the L1 exam, with emphasised questions that are functional and practical, with explanations as well that serve to educate candidates. The Rules Advisor exam is still good preparation for the L1 exam, but the L1 practice is going to be a lot closer to the real thing, and definitely more useful in that respect, I would have thought. The same actually goes for anyone who's considering level 2. Please do take level 2 practice exams. We've got statistics that show that people who bother to take the practice exam do better in the real exam, regardless of whether the practice was a pass or a fail. So, interesting stats there, but the recommendation's quite clear. Use the practice materials that people have gone to such efforts to make for you. Moving on to policy announcements for December. We had some new DCI documents posted. I'm going to slightly brush over these. The changes were somewhat controversial and some of them have been reversed. So my advice to you is you should, before going to your next major tournament, check the current state of the IPG and make sure you look to see what changes are there. There was a new section 1.4 regarding optional abilities. There are changes coming to it. And I don't right now know how that section is finally going to appear. So same advice as I just said. Next time you're going to a tournament, look at the IPG and check to see if it's changed since the last time you read it. We have a fiat around handling the werewolf trigger. When a werewolf trigger is missed, it could be noticed after the condition for its trigger is met again, and according to the IPG, you'd then put both triggers on the stack, transform the card twice, and then end up with nothing there, with no transformation at all, effectively. We didn't think that was particularly satisfactory, so in this particular missed trigger situation, and I need to emphasise only this situation with a double werewolf trigger, absolutely nothing else, then we have been told to resolve that by only resolving the one trigger, ignore the other ones, and that produces the most intuitive result, and that is a transformed werewolf. We have a reminder for intentional draws in Wurr. You do need to assign an intentional draw as a 0-0-3 result. So that's 0 games won by either player and 3 games drawn. As if you do assign it as a 0-0-0, the players will not be assigned any points. They won't get their one match point for the draw. I'm led to believe that's because the 0-0-0 result is used in Wurr to indicate a kind of a double match loss situation. We then have a spate of questions regarding regular rules enforcement level. It's been asked if two players who are running for first place at an FNM, say, are allowed to say, let's split and ID. Now, the IPG would allow you to do a prize split on a match and take an intentional draw as long as the two proposals are not contingent on each other. You can't say, I'll split the prizes if you agree to a draw. That's crossing the line into collusion. You are allowed to say, shall we split the prizes? Yes or no. And shall we draw the match? Yes or no. As long as those are two separate decisions, we're fine. However, that kind of level of technicality, knowing kind of how to word that proposition to not fall foul of the rules, isn't really expected at an FNM. We don't have an official answer for handling this at regular, but it is suggested that if you have players who are likely to try something like this, educate them before the event, or suggest that they ask you what they're allowed to do before taking such an action. There is a widespread consensus, however, that at regular rail there definitely shouldn't be anything that would allow anything that would be construed as betting in relation to the outcome of the match. So my advice would be just say, do you want a prize split? Do you want to ID? These are two separate decisions, and if you phrase them like two separate questions, then there shouldn't be any problems. We've got two checklist issues for regular rail. So we're at an FNM and a player draws and then discovers, having mistakenly added a second checklist card representing a single double-faced card in the pool. And if you're called immediately and determine there's no cheating, according to the jar, the best fix is probably just to take the second checklist card out and have them draw a new card. It's slightly unsatisfactory in a sense, because by playing with two checklist cards, they've kind of increased the chances of them drawing that particular card. But this is regular rail, and we deal with deck errors and continue the game at this rules enforcement level. The best way we can deal with it is, as I said, to go ahead, get rid of that second card and just replace the draw with a new one. In a similar fashion, another question that was asked is, players got three double-faced cards in their pool, and the guy's put three checklist cards in his deck. but he accidentally marked two of them the same way. So rather than having one checklist for card A, one for card B, and one for card C, he's ended up with two for card A, one for card B, and none for card C. It's kind of missing. And discovers it after drawing the second one that's marked the same way. Well, we'd just fix that by changing its markings to mark it for card C. Obviously, I'll stress here that I am talking about the regular rules enforcement level. At competitive, either of these would be considered to be deck problems, would give you there'd be a game loss. There's no need to work out how to fix the game in order to continue, because it's just simply not going to. Staying on the theme of checklist cards, we've had some questions about artistic modifications on checklist cards. And it's just been confirmed that a checklist card, like any other magic card, can be altered. But according to the latest MTR, it must not obscure the name and the mana cost. In other words, the card has to be clearly identified as a checklist card, which, remember, is not a proxy. They're completely different. And this is kind of vital when you consider there was recent legal action regarding counterfeit cards. With regard to that legal action, the proxy policy has been further clarified, and you should check out the updated paragraph in the MTR, the proxy policy page, and an article written by Ben Blyweiss about counterfeits. Some questions have been asked recently about the DCI's investigation process with a certain high-profile case that I won't mention by name. The usual timeline for an investigation to conclude is not longer than 90 days from its submission. They tend to be resolved in groups by month and not on an individual case, with the exception for aggressive behaviour, DQs. So some time may elapse between an investigation starting and it being concluded, but the conclusion would ordinarily be reached within 90 days. Remember that judge list protocol forbids us posting charges of misconduct by any player, judge or organiser or employees to any list. It would, however, be appropriate to discuss topics inspired by this. So if you want to talk about the danger of prejudging an individual without naming them, or talk about some common cheats, how to spot cheats and stop them, and ways to read a person to maybe work out whether they are cheating, again, without reference to particular instances of this happening at tournaments, then these are absolutely fine things to talk about. As an example, out of a recent case, we have some discussion about downgrading warnings to cautions. We trust judges generally to know when circumstances allow a penalty to be downgraded. It's spelled out pretty clearly in the IPG. If there isn't a provision for a downgrade, then don't do it. Players might sometimes ask for explanations or state their reasons if they believe the judge is wrong. But a player explicitly asking for a downgrade, well, that's kind of interesting. Maybe they know the IPG particularly well and they know that this is a possibility and they're just, you know, trying their luck. It is something you should probably take note of and take a short time to investigate. It maybe does indicate some suspect behaviour. I'm just going to call that an indicator, however. By no means does a player requesting a warning to be downgraded to a caution instantly mean that person's up to shenanigans. They might just be trying their luck. Or they might genuinely believe that they haven't acted in a way that deserves a warning, so take that as you will. Back onto the alterations thread. In Odyssey, there used to be a little tombstone icon in the top left of any card that used the flashback mechanic, and I believe this might have been revisited in Time Spiral as well, I can't remember per se. But the newer flashback cards don't have that icon, and one of Arthur Halliway's local players had altered some dredge and flashback cards by painting the tombstone icon onto them. According to the latest MTR, this is perfectly fine as long as the name, mana cost, these aren't obscured, and the border is clearly a black or white border of an original magic card. Whilst the policy doesn't state that the border cannot be obscured explicitly, the card's much less identifiable if it is. You must be able to identify the card as an original magic card. You can't just take a piece of card that happens to be the correct size, paint completely over it and say, oh yeah, sure, this is a magic card, really, honest, gov. Finally, we had two questions regarding some slightly sloppy player behaviour. One example was with Ponder, thanks to Morgan Mian Lam. After it's resolving a ponder, putting some cards on top of their library, they pick up the top two cards again, have a look, and just to remind themselves what it was they put there. It's not an infraction per se. It's not looking at extra cards because, well, they're only looking at cards that they were allowed to look at. It is more of a technical issue, and you probably should remind that player to be more careful and use the usual continuation if players are ignoring judge reminders to play careful. Similarly, there are some card interactions like the interaction between Lion's Eye Diamond, which has you discard your entire hand when you activate the mana ability, and Infernal Tutor, which allows you to search for any card in your library whilst your hand is empty. It does require some extremely clear communication to make sure that the effects are being performed correctly. It's worth, if you have a disagreement over exactly what's happened with a Lion's Eye Diamond activation, to ask the player some questions to figure out if they actually know what they're doing and how they're doing it, and then rule based on what happened, and do encourage them to play cleanly. We also had for discussion two bronze level knowledge pool scenarios. In one scenario, in a deck check, players discovered to have listed 16 sideboard cards, 4-4 offs, and indeed has all 16 sideboard cards with him. What would you do to resolve that? Secondly, a Phyrexian Revoker situation. Somebody plays a Phyrexian Revoker, naming an Inkmoth Nexus, which is a land, where Phyrexian Revoker's ability specifically says that non-lands are supposed to be named. The game continues. The player who is the opponent plays a Garruk Primal Hunter and then notices that the Phyrexian Revoker can't be naming the land and calls a judge. How do you fix that game state? Both of these scenarios have solutions that have been posted to the list. They're worthy of some discussion. By all means, post them to your own judge communities. Use any forums that you have. Get some discussion going. If maybe your forums have been stagnant for a little while, then use those knowledge pool scenarios to encourage more discussion. But always do follow up with the final solution as given on the list. Finally, for this podcast, we've got two events coming up in January. We've got GP Austin on the 7th and 8th of January, and GP Orlando on the 14th and 15th of January, with the head judges being Jason LeMahieu and Riccardo Tessitore, respectively. Is that going to be Jason's first head judge responsibility as a level 5? I'm sure he'll enjoy that. Austin uses the Innistrad sealed deck and booster draft formats, and Orlando is standard. And whilst you're there, look out for Eric Dickerman and David de la Iglesia from Costa Rica and Spain, respectively. Been listed as Globetrotters, that are doing the double of Austin and Orlando. Also, if you're attending GP Orlando, look out for Hector Fuentes and Jorge Morales from Mexico. I know Hector from some time ago. He's one of the most energetic judges I've come across. You will definitely enjoy judging with him if you get the privilege. So, look out for those international Globetrotters. That's it for this month's summary. Look forward to speaking to you next month. Bye-bye.